I don't care how big this PB is. I just want to get back to my best, if you know what I mean.
You're getting professional athletes that are following the content creation path.
I think fair play to the athletes for actually sharing their training.
Yeah.
Because so often athletes don't want to tell their competitors what they're doing.
I love eating other cultures in terms of their food and stuff. And that sounded crazy. I love eating other cultures. Ben, thank you so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to be back.
We've literally just been catching up for like 3 hours before this.
Yeah.
Probably had the entire podcast conversation off podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if that's probably the best for a podcast, but we've had a lovely afternoon.
We've had a lovely day, mate. It's been fantastic. I actually managed to drag you up to London 2 days in a row because we're both going to an event tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we were hoping to do the podcast the same day as the event, and then we just couldn't get it in. So, but yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
2 days in the big smoke.
I know, bro. I kind of forget, though, when people aren't living in London, how much admin coming into London is.
Yeah, it's not too bad for me. I'm only like an hour from Stratford.
Yeah.
And we have a train station in our village. So it's like I can just hop on the train.
Yeah.
So it's an hour and a half out of my day to get here, but it's not like I've got to drive 3 hours to get in or anything. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
just jump on a train and you're here. So
ideal. And then we went on a run. We had a little run around the streets of London, the very busy streets. We timed it pretty horrendously, to be fair, because everyone was coming out of work.
That's true.
But no, I honestly struggled, by the way, on that run.
Really?
I found it tough work, mate.
Yeah.
I've done one since, and that was my run club, which I did like a 6-minute kilometer.
Yeah.
And then this, we were probably doing like 5:20s.
Yeah.
Because your resting pace is obviously a lot faster than mine.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe that's probably why you
you're just like springing along next to me.
I was taking it easy. You were trying to
wait, let me check my heart rate.
Keep it up.
I feel like it was quite high. I feel like people are going to look at that and go, why is he just like gray zoned that to shit?
Did you have your heart rate monitor?
No, this is just watch. So take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
Average heart rate 151. So,
not bad. So you're kind of like top of zone two and maybe into zone three.
Yeah.
Should I have a quick look at what mine was just for the fun? It was wrist heart rate, so it might not be.
Yeah, take with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, because I forgot my monitor. What's it say? Average 120, max 141.
Crazy. So out of interest, what is your zone two pace?
Usually around 4:30 a kilometer.
Okay.
So, and that's like a 130 to 135 heart rate type thing.
So my heart rate was at 180 in the marathon when I was doing that.
That is crazy.
Just shows the levels here, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You'll get there. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I don't want the Chicago experience to tarnish my fitness levels in any way.
Yeah.
Because I still got through it, so.
Yeah, and I feel like with marathon running as well, you have to go for it. You have to full send a couple to realize that's not the way that they should be run if you want to have a good time.
Yeah.
Like some days you can absolutely go for it and it pays off.
Mm.
A bit like my run in Boston a few years ago. Like
exactly.
I just went for it. I didn't have a time goal and I come away with an incredible time.
Did you really go into that with no time goal?
Not really, because it's such a hilly course.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no point saying, okay, I'm going to try and run. I think my PB at the time was 2:28. So I was like, I want to try and beat that. And to PB at Boston would be incredible. So I never imagined like taking another 4 minutes off it.
Insane.
It was just one of those days where you just go for it and it worked. But often in a marathon, if you go for it, like we were saying earlier, if you're 10 seconds each 5K too quick at the start, by the time you get to 30K, that's when it comes back to bite you.
Yeah. Well, before we get into Chicago stuff, you at Boston, that was your previous PB, wasn't it?
Yeah. So 2 years before the Chicago marathon, pretty much to the same month, I ran my personal best in Boston. But then I had like a few years of injuries and stuff. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'll never get back to 224 shape again.
Did you really think that?
At points, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Obviously, like, what I think when you're injured, everything is heightened. And I just struggled for quite a long, like it was a 2 year period where I'd slowly get back to maybe 2:30 marathon shape and then I'd get another injury and it was like another setback.
Yeah.
So it was like, just as I was getting back into things, you'd get knocked down again. So it did some points feel like I wasn't going to get there, but I kind of knew deep down, as long as I was still dedicated and did the training, there's no reason I couldn't. So,
well, you got there once. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think someone commented on one of my YouTube videos once, I was saying about how my marathon pace felt like so alien and just terrifying and hard. And they said, well, you've done it before. So the chance of you getting back to it a lot easier than doing it for the first time.
Yeah, and I feel like with the marathon as well, it's a confidence thing. Like going into Boston, I would have never imagined the pace that I averaged was my average pace. But then like into the next training block, you're like, well, I averaged 3:25 in Boston, so that's my marathon pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll train at that pace now. Like I know it's achievable. Whereas when you're going into a marathon first few times, you don't know what your goal pace is going to be. So you have to do a few.
Swing the bat, mate.
Exactly. And find out like you did.
Yeah, exactly, mate. I mean, I kind of went into it very much with the mindset of like, I've never been like faced trouble in a race. Every race that I've gone out to PB, I've PB'd. And obviously I did still PB, but still I've never had that humbling experience going, cool, I was way off it there.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad I had it, you know?
Yeah. And you'll probably learn a lot more from that than if you went there and just smashed it out of the ballpark, because you're probably going to the next marathon and be like, oh, I'm going to run 2:40 now. And then you might like burn yourself out or whatever. So sometimes it can be a bit of a blessing.
Sometimes win after win is actually a bit more detrimental, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously just come off the back of Chicago. Incredible performance. Unbelievable. PB there. Talk to me about that. How was the block going into it? Because last time we spoke, you were going into London and you'd just come back from Kenya, I believe. Were you about to go to Kenya? One of the two.
Yeah, I think I just got back from Kenya and I was preparing for the London Marathon, which unfortunately didn't go to plan.
Didn't for many though.
No, I ran 2:35 in London when I was aiming for a PB. Mm. So 2:22, let's say. That was a freakish hot day. And I think I set off too fast for the conditions and died a death. Like you said, a lot of people did. But since then, sort of like built back into training, had another unfortunate like crop up of an injury in the sort of period between London and Chicago. So I had like hamstring tendinopathy, which was kind of one of the most annoying injuries I've had. I've had stress fractures before, and I actually found the hamstring tendinopathy harder to come back from, because it was like one of those injuries that it was fine one day and then I'd go and do an interval session and then it would be crap for like another 3 weeks. So it was like you'd take one step forward, then two steps back, it felt like sometimes.
So you'd like hit it hard and really just throw the hammer at it and then you'd feel the consequences of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what I figured out after like a few months of training that I basically couldn't do anything in my training faster than marathon pace because it would cause my hamstring to flare up.
Right.
But then throughout this period, I've been working on like the rehab stuff and strengthening the area that was weak, that was causing the issues.
And what was that?
Touch wood. Just like hamstring, glutes, the hip area.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of work in the gym in the build up to Chicago to get my body to a place where it can kind of handle the training needed to run to low 220s again. So, that was a big part of the training block. It definitely wasn't perfect in terms of everyone's always dreaming of this perfect build. I had a period, probably 2 weeks, where I was struggling with like energy levels.
Okay.
I never really got to the bottom of it. It was either some sort of like viral thing that sort of was around the time I did Stockholm half marathon, so about 4 to 5 weeks before Chicago race day, or it was a low iron thing. So I since took, because a lot of the symptoms I had were suggesting I had like an iron deficiency. I stupidly never got round to getting bloods done, but I started taking iron supplements, and sort of like 10 to 15 days after taking them, I've realized that my energy levels were now coming back.
Okay.
So I think a lot of it was based on that.
Yeah.
And then sort of, I guess the 4 weeks before Chicago, that's when my training started to click and I felt like I was getting back into PB shape again. I had a race 2 weeks out from Chicago where I finally felt like myself in terms of racing again. So I knew that come Chicago, I should be able to be in a place where I can attack that 2:24 from 2 years prior.
Mm-hmm. Coming back from, like, because I said this to you earlier, I first found your content when you were doing your Copenhagen comeback. So for those that don't know, when you had your big stress fracture in your, was it your femur?
Yeah.
That you had it?
Femoral shaft stress fracture.
So that was a pretty serious injury and you had to bounce back from like really great form where you obviously PB'd in Boston.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that timeline for me, how that all paid out?
Yeah. So I think like leading up to Boston, everything had gone incredibly well for like the 3 years prior to it, basically, in terms of you do a training block, you recover, you go again, and it was just, everything was like stacking
like
on top
the new gains and stuff all hitting the ground
and you
hard.
Just feel indestructible. And I felt like 220 was on the cards for the next one. So then I trained for Valencia Marathon after Boston, and I just went off to way too quick, ran 238, which is my slowest marathon that I've run, and basically just pushed things a little bit too hard. And that's why I think led to the stress fracture. I wasn't respecting the recovery after races. I was just trying to like hammer the training all the time. And I was doing like, I think after a marathon, I did a half marathon race the week after.
Oh, man.
I didn't race the half marathon, but I still ran at like a tempo effort. And I think it still took a lot of stress on the body still, even though it wasn't a full race effort. So that kind of caught up with me, which led to the stress fracture. And then it was kind of like the period of time I had to take off running wasn't too long. I think it was only like 6 to 8 weeks off running, where I was doing like quite a lot of cross training. So I was able to maintain the fitness. But then when I got back into running, it still took me like another probably like 3 or 4 months to even get anywhere close to where I was, because I just had to build things back really slowly. It's been a bit of a journey really since the Boston Marathon. You had the Copenhagen comeback. I think I ran 2:28 there, which was a good run based off the training I'd done in between it and the injury. And then built back for Chicago. Everything was going well. Then hamstring tendinopathy came along.
Oh, but mate.
Yeah. Thankfully,
but it paid off
good now. Yeah.
Really in the long run, because you ran 2:23 in Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The hard work paid off. It was kind of just getting over the injuries that was the main thing that led to the slight increase in performance. It was getting back into the consistent training. I didn't do anything in terms of the block that I hadn't done before. I think it was just a case of getting healthy and making sure I was doing the rehab stuff that allowed me to build the foundations for Chicago.
When you're like thinking about your kind of race calendar, obviously you did London, and you kind of set that out as your first time doing London, right? A race, cool. This is going to be my spring marathon A race. You planned that. At that point, did you know you're going to run Chicago as well? Or then did you choose that after London?
Yeah, I'm quite... like when I have a race, I have like the blinkers on and I don't really think too much past that, which I think is definitely maybe a downside, because then I don't necessarily plan my training blocks with enough time sometimes.
Got you.
So I'd like to do like work on that a little bit more in the future. But
that might be a strength though. That might be why races work so well for you, because you just focus on
yeah,
that.
True. And I'd rather see what the outcome is of that race before committing to the next one.
Yeah.
A bit like Chicago. I kind of had a rough idea of what I was going to do after, but it was going to be based on how Chicago went, whether I would do that or not.
I think I got offered Chicago the week before Paris. Yeah. So I had an idea that I was going to be doing it the week before, I think.
Yeah.
Which was like a bit of a mind bend almost, because I kind of knew that like, okay, my next marathon's only 6 months away.
Yeah.
If I don't get what I want, I have that sort of like fallback.
Yeah. Yeah, so that makes sense. I think with Chicago as well, it was one that I like wanted to do. So I went out and actively pitched it to a brand to try and make it a thing type thing. Like I talked it into existence.
Nice.
Whereas often in like the social media game, sometimes you get offered opportunities and like you take them.
Yeah.
It's like they're incredible opportunities.
And you also kind of have that whole catch 22 of like, if I don't say yes to this opportunity now, I may not ever get it again. So London was a disappointing one for you and so many others.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the change of tactic between training for London and training for Chicago. What did you do differently to get to where you got to in Chicago?
I think the hamstring unfortunately had like dictated a lot of the preparation for Chicago. Like I said, I couldn't do anything faster than marathon pace for like, I think it was at least a 2 month period.
Yeah.
So that meant my training had to be more aerobic based. So I did a lot more like easier running, and my sessions were longer sessions but at lower intensity, which obviously helps for marathon running. And I think it was one of the main decisions why I decided that Chicago Marathon was going to be the next thing, because I could train for a marathon, but I couldn't train for the 5K.
Yeah.
At the time, I was trying to improve my 5K time and doing all these VO2 max sessions, which was causing the hamstring all kinds of issues. So that was like, that dictated the training for Chicago quite a lot. And yeah, I basically just went all in on marathon pace work in the build, rather than doing a mix of stuff, which I think helped, but also maybe hindered as well, because you can't touch all bases, which I think are needed for a good marathon block.
Yeah, from what I gather as well, it sounds like for Chicago, you trained more like an athlete than a content creator.
Yeah.
Because you were saying to me how there were certain opportunities which you turned down because you wanted to keep regimented to your work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in past marathon blocks I've done, I've committed to things that have been detrimental to the race.
Yeah.
So I was keen, if I was going to do Chicago, I was going to commit. Like, I had a few brand opportunities to travel. One was to Tokyo for the world champs. One was to do New York Marathon. But I had to really like sum them up and be like, I can't fully commit to those as projects, as how I would like to approach them. So I'm going to have to say no, but I'd love to do them in down the line. But I'm all in for Chicago. And that was the mindset I had to take into it if I was gonna give my chance of PB.
Sure.
And so in hindsight, I'm really glad I did it, but it was tough at the time to say no to a trip to Tokyo. But,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That was but also as well, you would have really struggled to like get good training in out there with how hot it was and how humid it was.
Yeah, I think it was like a 2 week period that was going to be disrupted in my training, which doesn't sound like too much. But I knew it was in like the crucial part of the marathon block where I just didn't want to put that strain on myself.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did it now in hindsight.
Oh, mate, it paid off. So talk to me about the race then. So you go out to Chicago, you were there with ProDirect and Nike.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that whole experience and how going into the race, you knew you were set up for almost success in that situation.
Yeah, I think going into Chicago, I sat down with my coach and talked about like how we wanted to attack the race, because like I hadn't PB'd in 2 years. So the main thing for me was just to go to Chicago. I don't care how big this PB is. I just want to get back to my best, if you know what I mean. I think like it was almost looming over me that I hadn't run a marathon PB in a couple of years. And I just, if anything, I was lacking the confidence to go for something like crazy ambitious. Based off my recent 10K and my half marathon, I should in theory be able to run a quicker marathon than maybe what I've run.
Because you're quite unique in this sense, like your shorter distance times dictate a quicker marathon time.
Yeah.
Like you're, for your speed in the marathon, you are so much faster over the 5K and 10K distance.
Yeah, like if you put my times into like one of these marathon calculator things, if you put my 10K or my half marathon, it would probably say I could run a 2:19 marathon.
Yeah.
But based on my training and the way my body is, I'm just suited more to those distances, so I can run faster at them.
What do you think it is about your like physiology that means that?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just what you're born with.
Yeah.
I started running quite late as well, so I feel like I haven't had a full like time to fully develop the longer stuff just yet.
What age did you start running?
It was about
when you were in Stockholm, wasn't it?
Yeah. So in 2019, I started running. But
so COVID, before COVID.
Yeah, but I only really got into it in 2021. So I've had like 4 years of proper training.
Yeah.
Which is enough to obviously run good marathons, but I feel like to reach my full potential in the marathon, it will maybe take 5, 6, 7 years of full like aerobic development type thing.
It's so interesting seeing this like collective of runners who all started around the same time as that.
Yeah.
Like Hugo was COVID, I believe.
Yeah, probably.
And
yeah.
Like it's insane to see the trajectory of where you can kind of go from to in such a short space of time.
You get addicted to it and you fully commit your whole life, then
I think
it's
Gabriel
crazy.
Might have been that sort of time as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of us.
When he came out of uni.
Yeah, when the period in our lives where we had this free time to commit to something else.
I unfortunately went the other way a bit. I just ended up putting on loads of weight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a weird one. I did do a bit of running and I remember it was so bad. I do not recommend this to anyone. I used running in the summer. So we had, I'm trying to think of the timelines of the COVID stuff. Yeah. So we were in lockdowns, weren't we? Like the first lockdown.
Yeah.
from February, or was it March? Something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was February time. It was definitely early into 2021. I think.
Yes, it went into 2021, but it was 2020, like March, February time.
Right.
I then like put on a ton of weight during that time.
Yeah.
It got to June, July. I was like, right, okay, it's summer now. The weather's a bit nicer. I'll start running again. Did like 4 or 5 5Ks per week, but I was doing them in the evening. As soon as I finished work, shut my laptop screen. I was eating about 1500 calories a day.
Yeah.
And I was just going out and full sending a 5K 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And it was so bad.
But that's how everyone was doing it. Like,
yeah.
When nobody had any ideas about training plans and like zone two running and like, how to structure a training plan. You just run as fast as you could every time.
Every time I was full pelt, I was wearing one of them. them arm phone holders.
Oh,
mate. I feel like it's a rite of passage, isn't it?
Definitely.
I just remember like weight just fell off me. It was so bad.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised I didn't get injured because it was like hilly as well in Bournemouth. I used to run up the cliff top like zigzags.
Yeah.
So going from the beach to the thing, just pelted down it and then finish my 5K just four and then walk back up.
Yeah.
But like bombing it down these like big hills.
Yeah.
So bad. Anyway, where were we? Chicago Marathon. You the race. How did it go?
Yeah, it went pretty much to plan, to be honest with you. Like, as I was saying, I kind of had a bit more of like a conservative race plan where I was just going to try and get a personal best rather than going for something crazy ambitious and blowing up and running maybe like a 2:30 again, which wouldn't is still a respectable marathon time, but I really wanted to set myself up to run 2:23. So my race plan was first 10K of the race, run 2 or 3 seconds per kilometer slower than my goal marathon pace that would set me up to run 2:23, which I stuck to. I think the hardest thing for me in marathons is not going too quick at the start because the pace feels comfortable because my 10K pace and half marathon pace is so much faster. I can often get carried away and I've done that in the past and it never works out. I've never been able to negative split a marathon before and Chicago was the first time. And I think it was because of this first 10K, don't lose your head strategy, which really worked. And I was lapping my watch every 5K, which I think helped in Chicago with a GPS. And I knew roughly what each 5K split needed to be on pace for 2:23. So,
and what were those splits out of intrigue?
I had like a range. So anything from 16:50 to like 17:10 was within that window.
Got you.
So the first two 5K splits, I wanted to hit like 17:10 at the slower end of my pace for the marathon. And then between 10 and 30K, which is quite a big chunk, but that was the time to like lock into the pace you want to run, like your goal pace. So I got to the 10K point, having started maybe 10, 15 seconds slower than needed for a 2:23 marathon. And then I locked into the pace, I think it was around 3:24 per kilometer, between 10 and 30K. And then at 30K, it was a case of, in my race plan, that's the point when, if you're feeling incredible, you can push on.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to do, you basically got to like follow the plan to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only then you can adjust it type thing. So that was my plan in the race. Got to 30K and it turns out that was a pace I could maintain, but I couldn't push on from it.
Yeah.
So that's why I ended up running 2:23 because, I got to the 30K point. I was feeling good, but not able to take it up another gear type thing.
Okay. And what was the moment in the race where you realized that you got the PB, that you knew that you had it?
Yeah, I think if I'm totally honest, I thought I had it more than I did, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So when I got to the halfway point and I went through in 71:55 to run a 2:23, like, to run sub 2:24, I needed to go through in 72. So I basically only had 5 seconds to spare at the halfway point. But because the GPS was slightly off, my watch was saying I was running 2 seconds per kilometer faster than I was. So when I went through halfway, I thought I was going to be quicker than it was.
Oh, yeah. Got you.
And then the same kind of thing happened at 30K. I kind of had a false sense of security that I had enough time. And then when I split my watch, I was like, oh, actually, you've only got like 15 seconds here. So I knew that I was on pace. And if I didn't fall off it, I wouldn't miss a PB. But it wasn't until the very end that I was certain. Mm. I think I saw Meg at like 38K.
You gave a wave, didn't you?
Yeah. And I knew like without a catastrophe, it was on, and I felt good within myself.
And that's why you looked up and waved at her, because the rest of the videos, you're so locked in.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not giving her the time of day, mate.
Yeah,
you're looking straight ahead.
She saw me five times, apparently.
It's amazing.
I saw her twice. So, yeah. No, it was a good race. I executed the race plan, and looking forward to the next one already.
Amazing, man. I have to say, your race video was an emotional watch.
Oh,
when you were kind of like, I think with you guys at the kind of sub-elite level, when you're kind of finishing a race, it's such a different atmosphere to when someone like myself will finish a race.
Yeah.
So many other people around.
Yeah.
And it's just carnage. Whereas you, it was like, there was hardly anyone around because, well, obviously hardly any people are finishing at that time.
Yeah.
And it was just like really empty, and I could just see you sitting with your thoughts about the race. And actually the first time I've ever seen you get emotional in a video.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that? How was that feeling crossing the line?
Yeah, it's incredible. Sort of the last 2 kilometers of the Chicago Marathon were like really quiet. There was just no crowd. And then in the home straight, it's like closed off to the public.
Mm.
So you, at this time as well in the day, like the elites have just finished. So the hype from the media is kind of just gone and the masses haven't finished yet. So like the crowds of people's loved ones haven't got there yet. So it's kind of a weird lull in the finish line where it's just dead silent.
Mm.
You cross the line and there's like 5 other people with you at the time. And then, suddenly it dawned on me that I'd done it. I'd like the last 2 years had been pretty up and down, and like, so reflecting on that a little bit. And then I rang my parents and my sister on our family WhatsApp. And my mum said to me, like, you do realize it was your granddad's birthday today, and he passed away a couple of years ago. Yeah, I knew his birthday was around like the time of the marathon, but I was so focused on the marathon, it hadn't crossed my mind that it was actually his birthday. So when my mum told me that she'd been to visit his grave in the morning, she told him that I was running the marathon. Like,
that's so nice.
Yeah, it all hit me all at once. Yeah. So you said
you've got special. A tattoo to commemorate your granddad.
Yeah.
And it was like a wasp cut in half. Now I watched this and you said one of my fondest memories was my granddad cutting wasps in half.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, hold on. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Can you explain this?
So growing up, we would always go to my grandparents' house. They lived in a little village outside of our hometown of Colchester. Every Friday night, we'd go there for Friday night dinner.
Yeah.
Which was a really nice thing growing up. So I had a real close relationship with both my grandparents. And we would sit in the summer in sort of like, they had like a conservatory bit, which was like an extension of their kitchen, which was always really hot in the summer. And like conservatories are, there's always bugs and stuff in there because, I don't know, they get in and then they get trapped because it's a light area. And I just remember I was probably like between 12 and 14 years old. So young enough to remember these sort of things. And it didn't just happen once, but a wasp would land on the table of the, while we're having dinner. And my granddad would just take his knife, like he's in the middle of eating his dinner, and just cut a wasp in half and like obviously kill it.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, what just happened? Especially at that sort of age. I wasn't sure whether to like be shocked or like admire my granddad who was like some brave wasp slayer.
That's so funny. It's so interesting how you have those niche memories of your parents.
And like when he passed away, I was like, I wanted to like get a tattoo to commemorate his life type thing, and just so he's always with me when I'm like running races and stuff like that. And I was like, what shall I get? And then I was like, the most clear memory I have of him is him cutting up wasps at the dinner table.
But
so
that's such
like
a nice memory. That's like, obviously like the actual memory itself is like such a like niche one, but it's like such a fun story to think back and go, you know, that was his character sort of thing. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I actually got the tattoo on my calf where I had a scar on my leg where I'd slipped on my grandma's like rockery thing she had in her garden.
Yeah.
I cut my calf open as a kid. So I got the wasp tattoo over the scar. So the cut of the wasp tattoo is over this scar from my grandma's rockery thing. I don't even know what it's called, but it was just a pile of rocks in the garden, like an ornamental
thing.
Yeah,
yeah, got you.
The placement of it as well is also special.
That's really cool.
For my grandma.
I got a tattoo when my grandma passed, actually, on my arm. It's like a half-filled coffee cup.
Oh, nice.
So essentially, like when I used to go around to hers, she'd like, you know, make her a coffee. And it would always need to be, the mug would always need to be half full.
Okay.
So she didn't have any like small cups. It was always just a mug, but half full.
Okay.
So that's why that's the same thing. It's a niche memory. Yeah. I feel like it's nice to have those things, you know, that someone looking at it won't go, it's not saying like, rest in peace or, do you know what I mean? It's not something it's only to you or the people that are close around you that know the meaning of.
Yeah.
It's quite cool.
Yeah. I could have got like granddad in a love heart, but.
Yeah. But that's.
This was way more meaningful to me. So I just thought, go. It's a bit weird, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one memory that stuck with me from my granddad.
So, no, for sure. Yeah, and so, right, so Chicago, unbelievable success, a really emotional moment crossing that line and like a lot of hard work paying off. When you obviously completed that race, did you think back to some of the things that maybe didn't work in previous races? Obviously, in the lead up to London, you went over to Kenya to train. How come you didn't go over to Kenya in the build up to Chicago? Is there a particular reason?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to make sure that I was at home and like had my setup and could get all my training done without the disruptions. Like Kenya is incredible and I will definitely go back there again.
Mm.
But it just didn't make sense for the Chicago block in terms of timing. The climate over there wasn't the best at the like before.
What sort of weather would it be like over there right now?
I think they have like a couple of rainy seasons. So you do have to pick your time when you go there because otherwise you can just get terrible weather and it's not very pleasant, especially because all of the roads over there are like mud.
Yeah.
Like, and when it rains, they're not runnable.
No.
So you're kind of like, oh, what do I do?
Yeah. That's a good point, isn't it? Because it's not tarmac.
No.
You kind of almost have to wear trail shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do a lot of my runs over easy runs in trail shoes because you get a bit more grip. So I just decided for Chicago that I wanted to be at home. Like I said, made some tough decisions with opportunities that cropped up and just made sure that, gave it all I could from the confinements of my home.
And it worked?
Comforts. Yeah.
So do you think like in like future blocks, when you're going for other goals, you'll kind of keep, you've got your flow now, you've got what works?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll still do some training camps, but ultimately if I can't make them happen, then I can do it from home. Like I have a really good training group back home with my club, Chelmsford AC. I've also got this group of lads who are all Essex runners of a similar ability. It's called the Holy Church of the Long Run. It's a bit lame.
That's quality.
Yeah. And we meet up on Sundays for our
nice
long runs.
Sunday mass, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll alternate between like whose place we run from. So it's really nice.
Sick. Are you all similar level?
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
That's cool.
We all kind of have some really focus on the 5K. Like there's a guy who can run really, I think maybe 14 minutes of 5K. So he's rapid. And then I'm kind of the marathon guy. There's a few like 66 minute half guys in there as well. So it's a good group to train with, especially for a long run, which can be a bit boring. So when we all meet up and get them done, it's good. So that's the benefit of staying at home. Like I've got people that I can run with for the key marathon pace sessions and stuff. So I'm not sure whether I'll definitely commit to saying okay, I'm just going to stay at home, because I love the thought and the experience of going out to Kenya, and I want to do more altitude camps in like Font Rameau or maybe even in Flagstaff. But
Gabriel went to Font Rameau this year before Berlin.
Yeah,
he said it was great.
Yeah, it did look really good.
Yeah.
I don't really know why I haven't, to be honest.
Yeah,
I just,
and it's nearer than Kenya.
Yeah, yeah. I've been to Kenya four times now.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of it for next spring, I think.
Yeah, it
like,
is so.
I haven't thought about what race I want to do yet, but I think definitely just also as well, just to do something different and see a new culture.
Yeah.
I've never been to a country in Africa.
Yeah.
So like, I think it'll be a really cool experience.
Yeah. when I'm there, I feel the most like calm and I don't know. It just, when I'm there, it's just completely different.
How do you find the food situation though? Because like I love eating other cultures in terms of their food and stuff. And that sounded crazy. I love eating other cultures. That I love eating other countries' food.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like from what I understand from Gabriel and Hugo, it's quite samey.
Yeah.
And you are eating the same thing each day.
It's very samey and there's very little variety or flavor. So it doesn't sound great, does it?
No, you're not selling it to me.
But I don't mind it. As long as you've got seasoning, it's good. And the best thing about it is it's the perfect like nutrition you need for training.
Yeah.
Like there's not a lot of pleasure in the food. You have to come to terms with that. But when you're there, there's no saturated fat in their diet really naturally. Mm-hmm. You're not eating processed food.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you just know when you're there, everything's going to be locked in and it's all looked after for you. Like if you stay at the place where me, Hugo and Gabriel stayed, then you get your meals prepped for you. You know it's going to be safe. You're not going to get any issues with like food poisoning or anything. Obviously it could happen, but...
Yeah. So do you recommend the one you stayed at for me to go to?
Yeah, it's really good. The high altitude training center, which is where I've stayed every time.
Okay, cool.
There is a lot of other options there now, which I've also heard are really good. The place where I stay is maybe a little bit more expensive than some of the other places. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do it on a budget, then it's not ideal.
But all in, what did it cost you?
I think it depends how long you stay, but it's usually like £1,000 flights, £1,000 for accommodation.
Okay.
Roughly.
All right. For like,
and then maybe £200 spending money.
Yeah. For when you pop out to shops and like restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a financial commitment. But
then again,
it's an experience that like you'll have for your whole life.
Yeah, exactly, man.
I'd say any person who's into running, as much as we are, should go and experience it, no matter your level. Like,
That's the one. I did say this to you earlier. It's one thing I worry about. Is like, that doesn't mean to sound pick me in any way, but I worry that when I get there, there'll be very few people of my level because everyone there is like 230 plus.
That's what you would think, but it's actually not like that at all.
No,
like I would say at least 60, maybe even 70% of people who train at the high altitude are just out there for the experience. They're recreational runners. Like you meet people and you're out there that are the same ability as you and you go on all your easy runs together.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time I've been there, I can think of like three or four people that would be running your sort of easy run pace, your marathon pace sessions. So I don't think you would, unless you were really unlucky and went there at a time where there's only pro athletes there.
Yeah.
You might struggle, but also they have like pacers out there. So like one of the big jobs that the local people can take on as runners themselves is like pacers. So you'll meet them when you're out on a run, they'll take you on routes and you,
that's so cool.
You pay them like the going rate is, I think it's about £2 for a run, which is like really good money for them. And it's not crazy expensive for people like us. So you support the local economy as well. They have a job and they'll show you around. So worst case, if you got to the camp and there was nobody of your ability,
someone will pace me. Yeah.
Someone can take you out and show you the routes and stuff. But after you've been there for a week, 2 weeks, you'll soon realize like, you know, all the routes, you can just crack on training like you do at home.
So how long would you recommend me going out for if I did do it?
I would say 2 weeks as a minimum.
Okay.
But if you want to actually feel the benefits of altitude and like the level up of fitness, I would say 3 weeks would be optimum. Okay. And then after 3 weeks, I think the longest I've stayed there is 6 weeks.
Wow.
But after like 4 weeks, I start to miss home a lot. And like the food gets a little bit like, oh, I can't eat that again.
Yeah, that first Chinese afterwards must hit different.
Oh, man. It's crazy. Yeah. The first McDonald's when you get back is like,
you know,
an
what? I'm
explosion.
Not much of a Mackey's person.
No, me neither, really. But if you eat bland food for 3 weeks, trust me, when you get back, a McDonald's never tasted
you
so
want
good.
That look spicy, bro.
Yeah.
Just to feel something in your taste buds.
Yeah.
That's so funny. So I think I will do that then. That'll be cool.
I would like to. I'd like to make that happen. I'll join you for
it. Oh, mate.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Just let me know when.
Yeah.
If we can line it
with
our
maybe we can get
race schedule.
Your band back together that went last year and I'll just tag
exactly,
along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been a few times now, so I'm sure we can get a few people out there at the same time, which would be really cool.
Yeah. To be fair, I reckon Izzy would be up for it as well. And she's like, that's another great example to like show audiences that potentially wouldn't have seen runners of that level going to do that to show that actually it has benefit to people of all different abilities.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is quite cool.
I'll hit you up with a company that took me out the first time I went, which is called Running Trips.
Yeah.
And they basically put on 2 week camps where everything's organized for you. As a first time in Kenya, it's definitely the best way to experience it, because they set up all the paces, they take you to the track, they take you to Moy Ben Road where you do all your long runs and just look after you basically.
Yeah.
And teach you like the Kenyan culture and the ways of training. So that is the best way I would say of experience it for the first time. So
okay, cool.
I'll let them know that you're interested.
Yeah, that'd be wicked, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I wanted to quickly talk about sort of your calendar for the rest of the year, because we discussed it off camera, and December typically is a month that I've always struggled with in terms of like keeping myself, I don't want to say keep myself like honest, but also I've always struggled to feel focused during December.
Yeah.
So last year, what I did was I set out a challenge where I was going to run every single day of the advent calendar.
Yeah.
And the distance that I ran was correlating to the day of the month.
Yeah, cool.
So 1st of the December was 1 kilometer, 2nd was 2, all the way up till 24th, which was 24K. So the final like 15 days were like pretty kind of compacting on the body.
Yeah, yeah.
But I actually found it to be pretty good and I felt great from it.
Yeah.
I was essentially just base building all through December.
Yeah.
So it kept me good. It kept me in shape. And I've had a few messages from people that are wanting to do it.
So I was actually speaking with my coach about this as well, because I think sometimes in the past I've rushed into the next marathon or the next race and I've not had that period of training where you focus on the base building.
Mm.
So for any big race, you want to succeed at, like, especially with the marathon stuff, the first bit of your training block should be like the base building phase, where you build, you do all this, the zone two stuff. Like, there's not a lot of intensity, but the volume of training is quite high.
Yeah.
And what that basically does is that prepares your body for the specific training to come, so that when you do the fast marathon pace work, the intervals, like, you're ready for it basically. Yeah. It's a bit of, I like to think of it as like a pyramid. You've got to build the base so that you can build the speed work on top of it. If you don't build the base wide enough, then the top is only going to go, you can't build as high, if you know what I mean.
Okay, got you. Because if you go up straight up with something and it's got a thin bottom, it's going to topple over.
Exactly, yeah. So an ideal situation is you build that base over even a couple of years, you know, and then you tailor the training towards something. So a lot of pro athletes will do a base training phase over the winter, which is often around 2 or 3 months in duration.
Yeah.
And then it's only when they get maybe 4, even 3 weeks out from a big 10K race, they'll make all their training specific to that training. So like some of the, one athlete that comes to mind is Andreas Almgren. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He's basically like one of the best athletes in Europe now. He's got Swedish records basically for every distance. Incredible athlete. And he does this period of training where he works on his base all throughout the winter or for at least a 3 month period. And then he'll put all of that base into practice by targeting one race.
Wow.
That's how he has got so successful, by not racing basically too frequently and making sure that his blocks of training start with that base building phase and then go to more specific when you get close to the race.
Mm-hmm.
So something like a December challenge where you just, you're doing that is going to be great, because you come to January, you're going to have this base of fitness that you've built up.
Yeah.
And then you can be like, okay, maybe the second or third week of January, you want to run a fast 5K. And suddenly you'll be able to achieve that so much easier, having put in the work in the month before that. So
I remember on day 9, I did a 5K full send trying to go sub 20.
Yeah.
And I ran 4K to the park. Well, it's like 3K to the park. I ran like a 3K warm up.
Yeah.
And then did the full send 5K and then 1K cool down afterwards.
Yeah.
I ran a 20.01.
Oh, no.
And it was my second attempt at sub 20.
Yeah.
Was it second attempt? Yeah, I think so. And then I was like, nah, that's really wound me up.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I knew for a fact, if I hadn't ran for the 8 days before that and my legs were a little bit fresher,
yeah,
I would have done it.
True.
But then it meant that I went 19, I did 19:41, I think, at the start of Feb.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I was like, I was calm.
Yeah. So you used the base that you
did. Yeah. But all I will say is if you are doing it, because there are a few people that have messaged me that kind of like seen it as an angle to kind of get into running.
Yeah.
Amazing. But just be careful, because I was massively overthinking about getting injured.
Yeah.
So because I massively overthought about it, I just thought it as, right, it doesn't matter what pace I'm going, it's just getting to the end of each run.
Yeah.
So I kind of very much, particularly day 10 onwards, I just went out and did like, I was doing like 630s, 640s, which at the time was, my heart rate was like 130, I think, going at that pace. So I very much just took it slow and steady just to make sure that I didn't do any damage.
Yeah.
And I think it paid off because I didn't have any issues. I think I didn't even have any DOMS from the whole challenge. I thought as soon as I stopped, it would go, like, I'd suddenly hurt.
Yeah. But your body does get used to it.
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of that I've done, it's quite similar, was I went like bike packing as a teenager. And I think we were riding our bikes like 60 kilometers a day. And the first week you're like, oh my God, my legs are dying. Like I'm not going to be able to do this for another 3-4 weeks. But then your body kind of gets used to that and builds the resilience. And yeah, I guess you do have to be really careful, because that sort of training is like ramping up things. Basically every day you're ramping it up, which is not the most long-term approach. You probably want to ramp things up over months, not days type thing, you know, to be like long-term with the training, but as a fun challenge thing to do, as long as you're not ripping it every single day, taking it easy, respecting the recovery, sure. Like getting the protein after your runs, sleeping 7-8 hours a day, then there's no reason that you can't do the...
I was getting up at like 5:30 to like towards the end to get the like 20K runs in before work.
Yeah,
so like that was the long part. But it's a great challenge to do. Just do it with caution. And if you do it, tag Motional Intelligence Pod, because I want to see people doing this challenge. And I'll share them onto the story, because I think that'd be sick. If there's like loads of people that listen and watch the pod doing the challenge, I think that'd be class.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I won't be doing it this year, purely because I want to enjoy my December. I drank, and I'm not a big drinker, don't get me wrong, but I drank once in like the whole of December until Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And because every day I was like trying to essentially make sure I was fresh for the next morning to go out and do the run.
Right.
And I just didn't, I don't really like running outside of the morning. So do it with caution, but it is worth it if you do it right. All right, cool. So I wanted to chat to you about your targets the rest of the year. You've got something coming up in December.
Yeah, so this week after the marathon has basically been sort of looking at the pros and cons of basically doing another marathon. So I'm currently signed up for Valencia Marathon, but it was kind of like, is it worth doing it? Or is it would it be silly not to, basically? So again, I had that conversation with my coach and comes to the conclusion that we'll give it one more go in terms of building up. I've already built back up to a really high level in terms of my marathon training. So the plan is to do like another 6 weeks of specific marathon work. So I won't really be doing too much like base building stuff. It'll more just be building on from what I did to Chicago. To race in Valencia. So I think that is the plan. It's sick. Like it's 80% locked in.
Okay, cool.
I just need to see how my body feels in the next sort of two week period.
Okay, nice.
Because obviously coming from somebody who's been quite injury prone in the last few years, I don't want to rush back into it and cause all kinds of issues going into next year. So
does that play as a fear factor for you?
Yeah, definitely. Now? Yeah. Like, especially now I'm fit and healthy, I just want to do everything I can to maintain it. So like running another marathon 7 weeks after Chicago is definitely something that's going to cause jeopardy to that, like it potentially could. So we had to sit down and think about how we're going to approach it. And I'm pretty confident now, having spoken to my coach, that we can do it in a way that's safe and that will be hopefully allow us to chip off like 1 or 2 minutes off.
Amazing.
What I ran in Chicago.
Mate, if you PB in Valencia, that'd be so impressive.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Obviously, you never know with how long it takes to recover from a marathon. And I want to respect that in especially the first 3 weeks after Chicago.
Yeah.
It'll just be whether I can do a few marathon pace sessions in the 3 after that, mm-hmm. will that lead to a new PB, yeah. or will it not be enough? But I guess we'll find out.
Well, you'll be with a good team if you're doing it with Koros, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, you'll be got with a place through them.
Phil Sesman and Alex Yee. Any yeah. others as well?
I'm sure there's other athletes, but yeah, I'll let them do their thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Phil Sesman did the 207 in Amsterdam.
What an incredible run.
And as a B race.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that wasn't his full send day. So yeah. I'm looking forward to how he bounces back. And
do you think there's race, like, yeah. what, if that's his B race, what, 206 we'd be targeting?
Yeah, I think he's definitely, like, I've done Amsterdam half and I didn't think it was like the craziest fast course. So I feel like even if he just maintains that fitness in Valencia, he'll run 206.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what he's going to attack. He could even go quicker. Like I wouldn't put it past him.
How's Alex Yee looking for it fitness wise? Well, not fitness wise, but you know what
I watched
saying.
His like first, it was called Vamos, I think.
I saw that. Yeah. I haven't watched it yet.
It's really good watch, especially from somebody who knows very little about triathlon. Mm-hmm. He does this like super tri thing in it, which I'd never seen before.
Oh, mate, super tri is wild. I was actually supposed to be going to the Jersey one this year with super tri.
Yeah.
And it ended up falling the same weekend as Berlin Marathon. So
it didn't happen.
Yeah, mate, it's insane.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like sometimes you look at it and go, there's almost no point you doing that transition because you're going to be on that bike for so, do you know what I mean? For such a short amount of time.
And they do like, is it all the races in one day?
Yeah, I think it's over a weekend.
There's three races, all of the same. You do the same thing, but three times.
Got you.
And then the last time they enter the water, they enter in their position that they're currently in. So Alex is in pole position going into the last race and he has to start first. And then all these guys are like chasing after him. And obviously he's quite a small guy. So it looks like he's just getting absolutely bodied and beaten up. And then when it comes to the run, he's just like on another level. Yeah. So based off his triathlon training, he looks like he's in good shape.
Yeah.
And then he just casually runs like a 5K PB on track the next month. So I feel like, yeah, he's one of those athletes that I look up to, and the way, like, his worth ethic is just so strong that it seems that whatever he puts his mind to, he succeeds. So I reckon if he hasn't actually like fully confirmed, you get to the end of the episode and it's like, and then in December I'm doing, and then it cuts. So you're like,
oh, I swear he announced it on like Koros have announced it on socials.
Oh really? Maybe it was just the build up to his YouTube series, but
I'm pretty certain they have.
Yeah.
I haven't leaked anything, so I have no inside scoop.
No, me neither. So I'm pretty sure he's doing Valencia. It would be pretty cool to see how he goes.
Yeah.
Obviously he did pretty well in London.
Mate, 2:11 on debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. So I'm sure he'll be probably even closer to Phil's level now.
Yeah, but unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. They've been training together because Phil Sesman's just dropped a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, which is also brilliant.
Yeah, mate, I love how this like access is happening. Like, you're getting professional athletes that are following the content creation path.
Yeah.
And now being like, right, we have something to offer. People actually care about what we're doing, even though to us it's just our life.
Yeah.
People care. Let's document it. And they're documenting it in a really high quality way. It's so cool.
Yeah. And it's there's two things to really talk about with the athlete content stuff. I think fair play to the athletes for actually sharing their training.
Yeah.
Because so often athletes don't want to tell their competitors what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like for Alex Yee to publish a YouTube video of all his training he's done in a week, well, his competitors will be able to look at that and be like, okay, Alex doing that, I need to do it to get on his level, or they'll be comparing it to.
But then he'll find something else to do to take himself that 1% further.
Yeah, exactly. And also the brands that are putting money into investing in the athlete content, I think is really good. So like Koros are, I'm sponsored by Koros, so I guess I'm a bit biased, but seeing them put money into like a series where Phil Sesman is training for these marathons is really good to see. Yes, they sponsor him as an athlete, but they see the value in the content that can be brought to.
Well, you know what it is
audience.
As well. It's like, I think I've spoken to a few of the people at Koros, and Dougie. I don't know if he still runs to a high level, but he used to be unbelievably fast.
Oh yeah, he's still rapid.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's still rapid, but I think because he's got that knowledge base and because he's got that kind of understanding of how it all works, that for him instantly is like, well, that's value.
Yeah, true.
There's value.
Yeah, so
that.
I guess it's a case of brands having like runners work within the company that then like elevates their content and what they invest in, because they already know, I guess.
Yeah.
So Dougie is a perfect example of that. Like,
What's he run marathon times? You know,
He ran Valencia a year. He ran Valencia the year I was going for 220. I think he ran like 218, But he's one of those people that doesn't seem to train a lot.
Yeah.
Then he locks in for like 4 or 5 weeks and suddenly he's like, he's just winning every race he enters.
It's interesting because
he's really talented.
You know Ned Brockman?
Yeah.
Ned Brockman got 2:30 at London Marathon.
Yeah.
And then he like got injured. Yeah, broke his foot. And it sounds like he was doing London with a somewhat broken foot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Imagine if he was fully fit.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? He dropped to 2:30.
Yeah.
But I think there are just some people that are just naturally having, they do have natural, have that like physiology that is just the kind of like gift.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, true. Ned's a great guy as well.
Yeah, I met him.
I bumped into him in Chicago, actually.
Yeah,
did you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I was at the pub and we walked in, and it's because, well, so Schooner Scorer did
run with us. They did a Guinness together, didn't
they? Yeah, and he had obviously invited Ned to the pub and we were all there as well.
Yeah.
And Ned walks in. Schooner hadn't got there yet.
Yeah.
It feels so weird calling him that when I know his name, but he doesn't put his name anywhere online. Yeah.
I don't know his name.
Yeah. And he walks in, he's like, are you guys here for Schooner? I was like, yeah, we're having a beer, but yeah, he's coming along.
yeah,
really nice guy.
Very nice guy. Yeah.
First time meeting him.
We bumped into him at a Joe and a Juice.
Oh, cool.
We were just walking around and he'd just got in or something. He was just grabbing some quick food and we ended up like having a half an hour chat at the side of the road. He knew all about like me and Meg and her like transition from full-time fashion to now working alongside me.
That's
so
sick.
Yeah, he was super like invested in just like chatting with us as well. So he's one of the good guys for sure.
Yeah, mate. As soon as he's in the UK, I'm getting him on.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
Needs to happen.
Yeah.
Talking of Meg, how's that all been? So when we caught up last, Meg was, she'd literally just left her job to come work with you full time.
Yeah. So I think we're like 9 months into, we registered Bennett's Running as a limited company.
Amazing.
So we both work for Bennett's Running. So we're co-owners of the business, 50-50 split. So
very generous of you.
Oh yeah. What can I say? No, she does a hell of a lot behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Probably more than me.
You're just the guy that moves your legs fast.
Exactly.
Bro.
Yeah. I run the marathons. I get the training done, but Meg's the brains behind a lot of it. So, things are going really well. We're about to bring out, some merchandise, which is kind of one of the big reasons that she left her job, is to kind of like build the brand a little bit more and like, I guess, look at other revenue streams so that we can basically look at our future and having children and basically being able to support ourselves from what I built the sort of 3 years before.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going really good. Like I think the first few months, it was obviously like the transition period. It was very different for her, very different for me. Like I went from having the house to myself from like 7 till 5 or even later some days. So I could film all my content and now she's there all the time. So that took a little bit of adjustment for me.
Yeah.
And obviously for her, she was very used to a 9-to-5 working schedule. So obviously, and you all know this, but a lot of other people, I guess, outside of the content space won't, is that it comes in ebbs and flows with content creation. Like for Chicago, the two months build into that race were like full steam ahead. And now the week after it, it's obviously like calmed down a little bit.
What we're saying, like regular jobs get annual leave. You just had your annual leave.
So. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Took a week off and chilled out. So it was learning for her that there are periods that are crazy and there are other periods where it's a little bit quieter and that's okay. That's when we need to take time for ourselves to see family and stuff.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily fall on the same day each week or each month can look very different from the previous month. So for her, that took a little bit of adjustment. But I'd say in the last few months, we've really found like our roles within the business. Mm-hmm. Still sounds so stupid saying that out loud. She's designed all this merchandise that's coming out in November. We've also started a Patreon. So she's had a lot of input on that, just making sure we stick to a schedule and stuff.
What sort of stuff are you posting on Patreon?
Yeah, so we post like blog posts. Every week I'll film like a video for my Patreons, which are called training talks.
Cool.
So I'll basically just talk through how my training's gone that week and like how I'm feeling, what I'm building up to, and just give a bit more of a, like a personal insight into what I'm doing other than just the flashy stuff that you see on YouTube, I guess. And then every month we do like a Q&A where people can submit questions and stuff. And it's just trying to build like a community outside of the YouTube and the Instagram space where I can have a bit more of a personal relationship with people. So in Patreon, there's like, you can send messages, and I always prioritize like getting back to those people over like my Instagram DMs and stuff because they can get out of control at some point. So it's nice to have a smaller group of people that I can have like a personal relationship. Like they almost become your friends.
Your mates, like your group chat, isn't it?
Yeah, which again is a bit lame, but.
No, that's really cool. That is really nice.
It feels like we're building something like that gives back as well as it supports what we do.
Community's everything with this sort of thing.
Exactly, 100%
is.
And we actually use the money that we generated from the Patreon so far to pay for Meg's flights to Chicago. So it was like,
unreal.
It was over $1,000 by the time we booked her flight to get her there. And from a purely business perspective, it was not the right decision because the YouTube video won't make that back.
No.
Like the trip will be a loss.
Yeah.
But because we have this like Patreon community now that supports what we do, we can afford to do these things. So it's been really good.
Do you have a video editor or do you edit your own stuff?
I don't have a video editor, but I have Meg. So she is like, she picked up editing like so quickly. So
really?
Obviously she came from a creative background. So she was like a pro at Photoshop in like all the design stuff. So she knew like shortcuts and stuff that I didn't even know because I'm self-taught.
Yeah.
So we edit, it's probably like 50-50 edit-wise.
Yeah.
I'll work on a YouTube edit while she's working on an Instagram reel type thing. Or
that's really cool.
I'll go on my long run and she's worked on the week video and it's to a point where I can just polish it rather than have to sit there for 5 hours and get it done. So it's working really well.
That's really sick to hear.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like you guys have got a real format going.
Yeah. Because I was at a point where I needed help. Mm. Like, I was already at capacity in terms of what I could do in terms of outputs and working with brands and like revenue and all that. So having a second person to go all in on it has been really good.
Yeah, really
for both
exciting.
Of us.
Yeah. What sort of stuff are you dropping in November then? What's the merch plans, if you can say?
Yeah, it's just a t-shirt to start with, which has a really cool back design. Ben was running on the front. We were thinking like, should we go for something really cool, which we've already got like designs for in the future, but we kind of wanted to just go for something a little bit more mainstream, if you like, just as the first thing, because I've been doing YouTube now since 2021, so 5 years we never put out anything, so it wasn't just to start off small and simple and then see how it goes and then build from there. We've kind of got an idea with like the big races that I do, we want to work with say a designer. So for example, I'm doing Valencia in December. I don't think it will happen for Valencia, but we want to work with like a designer from Valencia, put together a design and then have it as like race merch.
Yeah.
But not
like a drop.
Yeah, yeah. Not necessarily like Ben is running merch, but it'll be like something cool in the running space that brings that together. So
that's a really good idea. I like that. Like a concert. Everyone loves a pop-up and things like that on race weekend. And there's a clear market for that. That's really cool.
I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, wicked. One thing I want to do today, because I feel like you as a person, Ben, have so much value. I've put out a little question box on my broadcast channel. It's called Motional Support Group.
Hence the name.
And I asked some questions of like what they would ask you if they were sitting in my seat right now. So I just want to go through some of them. Some of them link back to what we've already like sort of talked about already.
Yeah.
But the first one is on the content side. And it is, if you had to start your page today, what would be the advice you give yourself?
Oh, that's tough. I feel like just focus on your story. Like, I think a lot of people don't get into the content space because they feel like their story's boring or like they're too ordinary or they don't have anything to share. Whereas when I look back at when I started, I was that like there was nothing special about my running at all. I wasn't doing anything crazy and I was at a very like relatively entry level. So my advice would be just like start to tell your story, enjoy the process and just be consistent with it. Like, and you'll build an audience through your personality and rather than just, you don't have to be a quick runner or you don't have to be like running 50 mile ultra marathons every weekend. You can just be yourself and build a brand based on that. So that would be my advice. Just document what you're up to. Try and find a love for it. If you don't, that's fine. You don't have to keep doing it, but take the leap and see where it takes you.
Yeah, the worst that's going to happen if people go, I don't like this guy,
Yeah.
Or I don't like this girl.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, that's one person. But if like loads of people start saying that, it's like, okay, is this the right thing for me? You know, ultimately, it doesn't really matter what other people think if you're enjoying what you put out.
Yeah.
Because if you enjoy what you put out as well, it will resonate to a group of people. So
yeah, definitely.
That's really interesting, man. That's a good bit of value. Physically, what do you reckon the fastest is you'll ever get to?
In the marathon or what?
Let's go with, because they didn't say in their question.
Yeah.
Let's go half marathon and marathon.
Okay. Oh, I mean, it's really tough. You never know like how your trajectory is going to go. I mean, like 223 could be the limit. You never know. I'm hoping it won't be, but I feel like if things go well in the next 3-4 years, I should still be able to progress things. So in the marathon, I'd probably say like 216, 217 is where, okay, I can see myself realistically getting to. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to get to a level where I can compete with people like Phil Sessman. Like, no matter how hard
and
I try.
Why is that, do you reckon?
Mainly because I didn't start running until I was like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't a person who was into running as a kid too much. So I feel like you miss out on that. And just like physically, like, these are my attributes. Like, mm-hmm, I feel like I'm getting to a level where I'm almost reaching my peak.
Yeah.
As long as you like stack more training blocks on top of it, you can build up your potential. But I feel like just being realistic based on my progression and how I feel at the moment with the times I'm running, I feel like getting to that next level is something that may be out of reach, but I'm also content with that. Like, I feel like I've found my niche in the space.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. Like, I don't have like a burning desire that I have to make the Olympics type thing.
I also think there is this misconception that people need to be fast or like an impressive runner to make a success of themselves in the space.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is it Aubrey who is in your video?
Yeah.
What is it called? Bigger Than Running.
Yeah.
He was going for sub-4,
yeah,
at Chicago, and that, yeah, was his goal. And he's a massive content creator. Like,
yeah,
I don't think people realize it's like that guy was going for sub-4, which is a huge goal for him,
yeah,
and will probably a huge goal for a lot of people watching.
Yeah.
But he's not a 230 guy. Like,
yeah,
he's still just doing his own thing and telling his own story.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where like making your content relatable, I guess, comes in, because as I've got quicker, I've almost like thought, oh, maybe my content isn't going to be as relatable anymore because not everyone's running sub 230 for the marathon, you, yeah, know, or has the potential to do that. So I'm like, you have to just learn that. Tell your story, like everyone can relate to going through injuries, that everyone can relate to running personal best, hopefully, if they've run races. So like just telling your personal story, people invest in it because they'll see similarities in their own. And I feel like with people watching my content, if they can take something from it, inspiration wise or like workouts or anything, it's just an added bonus.
Yeah. How do you set yourself a goal for your first ever race? So this is like someone, they've signed up to their first ever half marathon. They've never run before. They've got 15 weeks to the race. What would be a way of setting your target, your race target?
Yeah. My first response would be kind of like, it's your first race. Don't set a time goal. Just go into it. Trust the process of the training and the result will be the result from your training block, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you'll get the time because of the work you put in. So there's no need to set a time goal, but obviously for some people it does motivate them. So I would say doing like some B goal races in the build up. So like, say if you're training for your first ever 10K race, do a 5K race like 4 weeks before the big 10K, and then you'll be able to base on how you run in the 5K, what you can kind of, mm-hmm, set a realistic goal for your first ever race. So I would try and not put too much emphasis on it, basically just enjoy the process and the time will be what it is.
Yeah.
And then you can try and beat it on the second time.
Yeah, nice. So naturally, like, obviously you're going to have people that are really good at running naturally.
Yeah.
That will go into a half marathon and probably run a 140 straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Still with those sorts of individuals, they shouldn't set themselves a time goal.
I think it doesn't hurt to have a time goal, obviously, yeah, but I wouldn't make it the sole focus of your first, mm-hmm, especially the first time doing a certain distance. Like, I think back to the first time I did my marathon, my first marathon in Copenhagen, I didn't have a time goal. I just wanted to run a marathon and see how it went. And I think that was the best way to experience your first marathon, your first half marathon, is just like, you're never going to, I still think I'm never going to feel that same high of running your first marathon. So adding a time goal just adds pressure on yourself and is not necessary for a first time.
Do you think you would care less about your goals if you didn't post on socials?
I think, like, obviously I can't get away from the fact that posting on social media and getting good results is part of my life now. But I think what motivates me as a runner is like that self-development. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I train so hard and have stuck at running for so long, is because the buzz you get from like achieving something that you've never achieved before is really hard to get from any other walk of life. So I think even if social media didn't exist, I would still be trying to run a faster marathon in Valencia. You know, if it all went away, I wouldn't stop the running just because social media wasn't there. And I think that kind of, I hope, reflects in my content that like I was always a runner first and then I'm just sharing it on social media. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously when I started, like running YouTube and running content was very, very small. There was only a couple of people that obviously I looked up to and thought, oh, that'd be amazing to do that as a job one day. But I didn't set off thinking, right, I'm going to be a running YouTuber. That's what I want to do.
No, yeah. I think now, because there's so many other people to compare to,
yeah,
there are a lot of people that go into the space thinking, I want to be that,
yeah,
which I think is fine.
Yeah, definitely.
But it does make things become a bit more mechanical.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I was a bit like you. I fell into posting that niche of content by accident as well.
Yeah.
Like I was just posting my own transformation stuff.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, I'll get Izzy into running.
Yeah.
And then built her up to her first 5K. And because we were consistently posting running videos, it wasn't like a conscious effort to be like, I'm going to post running content. It was like, this is a fun little series of her getting her into running. And then it just sort of like opened that can of worms, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
A positive can of worms, of course. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, you can't deny that when you have a good result, and you tell the story leading into that result, then it does well across social media. So then it allows you to do another one down the line. So they kind of do go hand in hand for me, but I know deep down that even if it didn't exist, I'd still be chasing faster and better times purely for myself.
And the love of the game.
Exactly, yeah.
This is an interesting one. I've seen so much like discourse about this online. Do carbon trainers benefit below average runners? Now, I want to caveat that, because below average runners sounds savage,
yeah,
but someone that runs a marathon time below the average marathon time.
Yeah. I always kind of struggle with this question a little bit, because like, obviously I'm not somebody who's running 5-6 hours. So without that experience, you can't say for sure, but I do think there is a, like, carbon can lead to improvements in terms of efficiency for any type of runner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, if you're going to take 6 hours to run a marathon, a carbon racing shoe is not necessary. And I would say if I was going to run for 6 hours, I wouldn't be putting a carbon shoe on.
Sure.
Because they're so uncomfortable relative to, say, your daily trainers. So it's a tough one to answer, really. It's hard to tell, but I still think, like, in terms of efficiency, you're going to benefit from a carbon plate no matter your ability. It's just whether it's worth the investment when you're so new, maybe, to marathon running. You could invest in a coach, which would be more value than the latest pair of running shoes type thing. You're going to get a lot more benefit from the structured training than the carbon racing shoe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough one to say either way, really.
Would you say there's a time cutoff for where it becomes actually necessary for a race?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
If you had to, this is me not pinning on you, but yeah, I'm just genuinely intrigued. So for my first one, my first race, I did sub-4, did 3:55.
Yeah.
I wore Pro 3s. And I mean, like, I couldn't tell, like, they helped me, obviously.
Yeah.
But did they help me?
Yeah. I feel like my sister's kind of going through this as well at the moment, because she's trying to run 2 hours for a half marathon.
Uh-huh.
And she's got some carbon racing shoes, but she seems to do better when she's wearing her daily trainers because they're so much more comfortable.
Yeah.
So I feel like there is definitely maybe less of a impact when you aren't as quick. You don't necessarily need them as much. But then as soon as you get to like the faster end, you're looking at every possibility to shave some minutes off or seconds off. So
I do think there's an element of, like, for me especially, you can run the paces that I'm running as well with just regular trainers.
Yeah.
Because for me, I was, during Chicago, I found a guy that I was running alongside him for, like, I want to say 2K. And by this point, I'd, like, seen him on peripherals for so long. I just said to him, I was like, what pace are you going for?
Yeah.
And I said it in miles because I knew my pace in miles. I don't know anything else in miles, but I knew what I was doing, because in case I needed to speak to any Americans.
Yeah.
So I knew that I was going to try for 7:15 per mile. So I just said to him, I was like, what are you going for? And he was like, oh, I'm currently going for like 7:15, 7:20, but hopefully going to speed up.
Yeah.
I was like, cool, we're doing the same. So, like, try to, like, lock in together for a bit.
Yeah.
And I looked down, he's wearing Evo SLs.
Yeah.
And I was like, fair play. Like, you're not wearing carbons. But for me, I've now kind of just gone the entry into running marathons.
Yeah.
In carbon shoes.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I wasn't wearing carbon shoes in a race, I would,
you'd,
like,
be at a disadvantage now.
I would mentally be at a disadvantage when I probably wouldn't be.
Yeah. My sister's actually going to wear Evos, I think.
Really?
For the Valencia half.
Oh, nice. Is she going to go sub 2 this weekend then? Is that
that's
her plan?
Yeah, I'm going out there with her to take on the mission with her. So we'll see.
Oh, best of luck to her, man. That's sick. I remember I paced Izzy for a sub 2. It was such a great feeling.
Yeah, if she can do it, it'll be incredible. But she's got a 2:06 half marathon PB at the moment. So it's quite a big reach. But hopefully with my pacing.
Are you going to run it with her?
Yeah, I'm going to run it with her.
Sick.
Yeah.
So what do you have to hold on to get that? Is it like a 5?
I haven't even looked into it yet. I think it's 5:45.
Okay, 5:45.
Or maybe it's a touch quicker. But yeah. She always goes off way too quick. So I think if I can stop her doing that, then she might be on. Because even when she ran 2:06 for the half, she ran like crazy for the first 10K and then had to walk run the last sort of from 16K on. So as long as I can get her...
Was that a Hackney?
It might have been, I don't know for sure, but she's done Hackney.
I'm just trying to think if I ever saw it on your socials.
Yeah, quite possibly. Or it might have been in Copenhagen. She did Copenhagen half as well.
Cool. That's such a sick race.
Yeah, it's so good.
Final thing I want to do with you, Ben. And now I think this could raise some question marks from a lot of people. I want to do the Mount Rushmore of running races.
Yeah.
So the rules are this. You don't have to have run them. Okay. It could be a mixture of personal experience / reputation of the race, and then it can be any distance. Okay, so you have prepared them, haven't you?
Yes, I've got a few in mind.
Cool. What we'll do is we're just going to go back to back. Okay. You say one, I say one, and if we agree, if the other person says it, we'll just go, I've put that as well. First one.
So this is quite a niche one, but you may not have heard the race, but it's called the Amar 5k. It's just known for being this crazy 5K race that takes place in Ireland. And it just attracts some of the world's best runners every year.
Okay.
And it is quite almost an elitist race where you have to have a certain time to get into it.
Yeah.
I think it might be even sub 15 to get in.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's like a proper race. It's not like a fun run.
No. It's purely for like sub elite to elite level. And it's just, it looks crazy. They always have a live stream.
Is it kind of like a podium 5K sort of vibe?
Yeah. But it takes place at night, so it has that kind of cool atmosphere vibe to it, and it just looks one of those where I've wanted to do it, but I've never got round to doing it. So for the 5K, that just looks like such a good event to experience at least once.
Nice. Well, for my first one, I've gone off really basic, London Marathon.
Nice. Well, yeah, you can't.
I don't think you can argue it, particularly both of us being our like home race.
Yeah,
the crowds are unbelievable.
Yeah. I kind of have a counter argument to that though, which is my second option, which is Boston Marathon.
I have put Boston as well.
Really? Yeah.
Based on the stature, it
exactly,
has to be in there.
And of all the marathons I've done, like that was by far the biggest spectacle, if you like. The fact that you have to get on a bus to get to the start line, which is like an hour and a half away. And then you run from one place to another across this crazy like hilly terrain is just wild. And like the crowd support there is like constant like craziness. So,
really?
Yeah.
Even though it's in some like random parts of town.
Yeah.
This is one thing that's confused me about Boston, When you're spectating people in it, surely you can't see them more than once.
No, I don't think you
can go once and finish line.
They do have like a tram line that runs alongside it.
Oh, okay.
Or like there's transport between. So like, for example, I went with ProDirect again and they had a videographer who managed to see me twice.
Oh, cool.
So he got on like a train and then went back to, saw me at like 10K, saw me at 35K, for example.
Mm.
So you can see people at multiple places, but it's not the best for a spectator.
Yeah.
But in terms of atmosphere, it was like, you know, in the really loud parts of Chicago,
yeah.
It felt like, it might not be because I've obviously hyped it up now in my brain, but it felt like Boston was like that the whole way through.
Wow.
So it was just some crazy one.
Crowds bigger in Boston or London?
Yeah, yeah. I think fairly similar, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because London crowds don't disappoint, especially if it was a hot day like this year. Everyone was out on the piss. It was insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably London actually a little bit louder.
Okay.
But Boston was pretty, like, it's just a special race.
Well, it's the history of it as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's in, you can't argue that. So, the moment you've got the 5K.
Yeah.
You've got Boston.
Yeah.
I've got Boston and London Marathon.
Yeah.
What is your third pick?
So, I kind of went for one in the ultra scene. I've always wanted to do, since I started running, is this backyard ultra thing.
Nice.
You may or may not have heard of it. You basically have to do 6.7 kilometers of running every hour and it's last man standing. Simple as that.
Is there one in particular you're picking?
I've been to spectate one in Suffolk, which is cool. Kind of close to where, I think it was about an hour away from where I was, and a friend of mine from my original running club was doing it. So I went to like support him, crew him a little bit. And I saw it and it was just so wacky. Like they're running throughout the night for a couple of days. Like they're trying to sleep between each little run they do. And yeah, it just seemed like one of those bucket list things I would love to do at some point. I don't know when, because it will take a, like that is the recovery from that must be months.
Yeah.
Like you're putting yourself right in the bin.
Mate, well, did you see the BPN last man standing that they did?
Yeah, yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah, something along those lines I'd like to try.
All right. Third pick I've gone with, also an ultra event, Moab 240.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So I think you
that
can't.
That's the like the pinnacle of ultra marathon.
It is, and it was last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Saw Andy Glaze and David Goggins did it.
Oh, really?
He returned. Yeah, David Goggins returned to do it. It's insane. Like it's far. It's like 4 or 5 days of running.
Yeah.
I think the winner does it in like 80 hours. I
Crazy.
Could be wrong, which is mental.
Can't imagine the training you have to do for something like that.
Oh, Max Jaloff won it his first time entering it. Yeah, insane.
So just do what he did then.
Yeah, just do what he did.
Yeah.
All right, what's your final pick?
This is a rogue one again, but I feel like an Iron Man. Like, I don't know which one.
An Iron Man.
So I'm somebody who can't swim very well. I'm okay on the bike and I'm pretty good at running. So I feel like if I did one, the first thing would be like, try and learn how to swim to a good level, because I wasn't one of those kids who were in the pool at like 5 a.m. before school type thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like I can't swim very well at the moment. And yeah, I'd kind of just like to train like a triathlete for a bit, like, you know, Alex Yee, and getting all this volume in. I think it could potentially be beneficial to even run training if you did it right. Obviously, it would take a little bit of a backseat to train for one.
Yeah.
Obviously you've done one as well.
Did a half, yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy hard, but yeah, it was sick.
How does it compare to, say, a marathon, like a half Ironman?
I don't know, because every like hard slog I've done has been like painful for a different reason. Like my first marathon was just horrifically hard because of my first one. I got loads of it wrong, but I still did it in the time that I wanted. The first half Ironman I did, the only half Ironman I did, I found really hard during the run. Like the swim went amazing, the cycle went amazing. Got to the run 16K in, I was like, this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And I then slogged it home. But in hindsight, I was like, I still was okay for like 4 hours of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So how was the recovery as well? Like,
I was actually all right.
Yeah.
I had to, similar to a marathon. I had to drive home from Luxembourg the next day.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
But no, I think to be fair, similar to a marathon, but like this Chicago marathon was really hard because I was in the pain cave for so much longer than I'd ever been.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a bit different.
Yeah, true.
My fourth pick, I did have a safe bet on here, but I'm going to go with my second pick, which is Rogue, because I'm inspired by your Rogue picks. The Great Wall of China Marathon.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen this?
Not really, no. I can obviously imagine what it entails.
It's apparently, the elevation gain is wild.
Yeah.
And it is so hard to complete.
Oh, imagine the DOMS after that.
Yeah. It's a tough race.
I'll leave that one to you.
Yeah, no thanks.
If you need somebody to help film it, I'll come be part of the crew, but I don't fancy it.
So yeah. That's what we think of those Mount Rushmores. I'm sure a few people
should do a poll where we can get people to pick which
your one's going to be tricky because it's just an Iron Man.
Yeah, true. I don't even know like what a good Iron Man is.
Should we just say Kona because it's the world championship?
Yeah. Okay, we'll take Kona.
That's in Hawaii.
I knew that.
Ben, thank you so much for coming on, man. Absolute pleasure having you.
Thank you.
So yeah, good to do this again.
I could do this like all day.
Yeah, it's wicked, isn't it?
It's good fun. Yeah.
It's good. Guys, if you want to hear more about Ben and everything that came before all of this, then go and check his channel out. It's amazing. As soon as I found you for your Copenhagen comeback, I went back and watched all the archive, mate. So yeah, you've been one of my favorites for a long time, so it's great to be able to chat with you, mate.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah,
thank you for inspiring people, and thank you for coming on once again. Appreciate it, man. If you are a fan of the podcast, make sure you're subscribed. Also, go and hype the episode as well, because it boosts us up on the hype leaderboard. New people can see the podcast, and it just helps grow the channel. So we'll be very appreciative if you can do that. Also, subscribe on YouTube and follow on audio platforms, and I'll catch you next week for another episode. Take care.